Ken Forrester, Executive Director at Momenta. Welcome to our Digital Thread podcast, produced by, for, and about digital industry leaders. In this series of conversations, we capture insights from the best and brightest minds in digital industry. They're executives, entrepreneurs, advisors, and other thought leaders. What they have in common is, like our team at Momenta, they are deep industry operators. We hope you find these podcasts informative. And as always, we welcome your comments and suggestions. Good day and welcome to episode 223 of our Momenta Digital Thread podcast series. Today, I'm greatly pleased to host Dominik Obermeier, CTO and co-founder of HiveMQ, a German company that is the most trusted MQTT platform. Dominik is the co-author of the book, The Technical Foundations of IoT. He is a member of the OASIS Technical Committee and is part of the Standardization Committee for MQTT 3.1.1 and MQTT 5.0. He is also a frequent speaker on IoT, MQTT, and messaging. Dominik holds a Bachelor of Science of Informatics from the Hochschule Landshut in Southern Bavaria. Dominik, welcome to our Digital Thread podcast.
Hi, Ken. Excited to be on with you today.
Yeah, excited to have you too. I've watched your guys' background. You know, we're an investor in the space, and I think we had an early opportunity to invest. Sadly, we passed, but I'll put you under the one that got away bucket, if you will. But always impressed with the work that you've done, especially the standardization work to give back in that regard. So, you know, we call this the Digital Thread podcast, and we always like to start off asking about your own digital thread. In other words, the one or more thematic threads that define your digital industry journey. What would you consider to be your digital thread?
Yeah, it's a great question, Ken. So I think there is multiple aspects of that. If I look back at the arc of my career and also the things that started before my career that catch my interest all over my life. And I was always deeply fascinated by disruption we make with technology. So I'm a big believer in technology. Is one of the ways how do we push humanity forward. And I don't only mean digital technology. I also mean like this is what humans build technology. Like since we exist, this is what we do. Humans build technology. And especially these days, in the last, I would say, actually since the internet emerged, since distribution got like a marginal cost of zero, actually, we see more and more disruption happening at a faster pace than ever. And there's also other technologies. I'm sure we'll also discuss like AI technologies and others that will, I think, increase the trend even further. So I'm deeply interested in that. And what's happening is disruptions happen, usually it's happening gradually and then suddenly. And this is something that I was fascinated by. And there's a second thing that I came to the realization that open standards is one of the ways, especially in computing, how we push the envelope even further and especially also faster. And one of the marvels of today's world is that we can have this conversation now. Listeners can listen anywhere they are based on technology, based on open standards. And we sometimes forget that like all the boring plumbing of the internet, of all the technologies we've built is happening on openness. And I also believe a big disruption happening in most industries will happen because open standards are going to win eventually, even in industries where you don't see a lot of openness. So this is something I was always fascinated by. And this was also one of the reasons why I founded a company. And since then, I think a lot about disruption. I think a lot about improvements that are happening over time, but all hopefully lead to an exponential curve. So yeah, this is, I think, a thread I followed just watching my own career.
And, you know, I'm always impressed. I like the digital disruption and the open standards footing that you have right there. And I think it does a pretty good job of describing your digital thread. Now, I always like to go back to a bit the origin story. And for you, I go back and I look at your university studies. Particularly, you said in 2012, you were honored for the best bachelor thesis in Southern Bavaria. So I'm really curious, what was the focus of that thesis?
Yeah, the focus of the thesis was quality assurance in web applications. And I was always very deeply interested in how to make software, but technology overall resilient and high quality. And this is also something when I started my career, I was in the first few weeks of my career, I was part of a rollout in a factory, in an automotive factory, also here in Germany. And I saw firsthand what is happening if production lines go down. So companies are losing a lot of money I actually couldn't believe back then at the beginning of my career how much money is lost per minute in these factories if you have a downtime. And I was deeply impressed on the one side how stressful it is to actually recover a downtime. But I was also surprised by how less time I think actually some companies put into high quality software. And even today, I sometimes feel software development pushes a lot for high velocity, which I think is great, but at the cost of resiliency and at the cost of high quality. And there are certainly some areas where you don't need high quality software. But overall, I believe, especially if you're interacting with the physical world, high quality software is important because you're letting your users down. In the worst case, you're letting your users down. You have a crappy user experience. This could be one thing for some pieces of software. But if you're interacting with the physical world, like in a factory, people are actually losing money. Companies are losing money. Goods cannot be delivered on time. So it's a big problem. And yeah, my thesis was also about that. And it's also very interesting. I didn't think about it intentionally back then, but also if I look at my arc, quality was always very dear to my heart. And even today, and what we do here at HiveMQ, we focus heavily and we invest heavily in quality because what we do in our company, we cannot let down our users and our customers. We run our software runs 24/7, 365 days per year. So there is no way that we can let our users down anytime. And we don't make any compromises on that. And yeah, my work back then in university was also around this. I'm more focused on web applications. And one of the things that I heavily focused on was automation. I still do believe even today, quality assurance is not enough automated and humans make mistakes, which is what we do because humans are pretty good at doing creative work, but humans aren't usually as good as machines when it comes to algorithmic work. And I think especially when it comes to quality assurance, a lot of the problems you have here are actually algorithmic problems and not creative problems. And so this is something I focused heavy on early in my career also.
You know, and looking at your background, I think what intrigued me was your early software development work. So you've already mentioned your manufacturing work. So you worked across a manufacturing system integrator, but also data center provider. Both you would consider to be high reliability and resiliency, if you will, use cases in there. So you already mentioned some of your key insights from that time. I'm curious, so let's fast forward to HiveMQ since you already talked about that. So you guys founded in 2012. Really, what inspired you and your co-founders to start the company?
Yeah, there were multiple things. Number one was since I also, when I studied and also before I studied, I always worked and in different software companies. Before that, also on construction sites, I did a lot of, let's say, physical work also before that when I was a bit younger. And what I found out and also what my co-founders found out that we didn't find the environment, number one, the work environment we were looking for in other companies. This was number one. And the second thing is, I think as a founder, you must be a kind of a misfit. You must have some ideas that you're not willing to compromise on in order to make it happen. And this is what we did. Like we founded the company. And yeah, since then we started. We didn't have a product, we didn't have customers, we had nothing when we started a company, but this is then something that we learn along the way. And also our company, I think, is a bit different to many traditional startups in the sense that for all of us, we were first-time founders back then, and all of us were engineers. So there was not a real business background, which was interesting, right? And I think this also, still to this day, we have a very engineering-driven culture in the company, which I'm actually very proud of. So it's a very customer-focused and very almost customer-obsessive culture we have when it comes to solving very hard problems for our customers. So, but also what was actually the, so coming back now to why we founded this company, why we founded HiveMQ. Back then, we found early articles from Gartner and Forrester and also other analysts who were mentioning and making predictions like in 2025, there will be 50 billion devices connected. Then later IDC came and said, oh no, there will be 75 billion devices connected to the internet and so on. So everybody was talking about massive quantity of connected things. But what we found is, how do you actually integrate all of this? What kind of technology would you use to connect billions of devices? Because as a reminder, we now have around 8 billion people living on Earth. 2012, there were a bit more than 7 billion people living on Earth. And if you look at all of the data centers, the computers and everything we built so far in order to support a fraction of humanity actually connected to the internet. It's just crazy. And the web technologies we have built with HTTP and other communication technologies, we found it's probably not suitable. So our hypothesis was you need a different set of technologies for the Internet of Things than for the Internet of Humans. And our work in the data center showed us that web applications with a few hundreds of thousands of users require so much resources. Things go up in flame all the time. We were not thinking about millions of users and let alone billions of users. So we didn't see how you would do that. And so we were under the impression this needs a paradigm shift. People told us back then it's a very bad idea. There's no one's needing that. Why would you need that? But now fast forward 10 years later or more than 10 years later, we are very happy that our hypothesis was right. So there was a paradigm shift happening around 2016, which brought us into a very good position because we then had the product ready to disrupt the market. And so, yeah, this is where we currently are. I'm very happy to also go into the details of the technology shift we have seen and also what HiveMQ brings to the table there.
That's interesting. You talked about you didn't have anything when you started, first-time founders, you know, engineers, you know, some ideas, etc. But what impressed me is, again, your background in software development across manufacturing and data center providers. So you had actually invaluable experience that you already brought in insights. And that's, I think, you know, certainly speaks to why HiveMQ has done so well. You've really stuck to that as your journey. So mind you, you guys co-founded this in 2012. That was a very different world back then as you started talking about all of the predictions and claims in there. So you've described the past 10 years at HiveMQ as helping customers build the data foundation and insights they need to create new connected products, find new efficiencies through automation, and scale their businesses within the demands of a real-time communication environment with MQTT. That is a mouthful, but over 10 years, it sounds like you guys have been quite busy. How are you doing that?
Yeah, so what HiveMQ is doing is we're building the central nervous system for our world. And if you think of a human central nervous system, what it provides is it's a mixture of decentralization and centralization. So what we're doing is we're connecting everything from devices up to things what we now call the edge, like factories, from machines in the factories to applications in factories, to factories itself, to other factories around the globe and to the cloud. So what we provide is really this kind of backbone of data transmission that allows you to connect things in real time. And with real time, I mean, in this case, the fastest time possible. So you can literally in milliseconds exchange data at a very, very big scale across the globe. And what we do here is we really provide a different way of doing things. It's not an incremental change. It's actually a change that is what many of our customers describe as a paradigm shift. So we completely changed the way how they approach specific problems, because now they finally have the ability to connect machines, applications, and also humans in any scale. To basically a central, imagine like a message bus, if the central nervous system analogy doesn't work for some of the listeners. It's a central message bus from edge to cloud with multiple hops. And so you can, at any given point of time, filter data, aggregate data, and also exchange data. And more importantly, also integrate new systems as you go without any integration effort. And this is something that we found very natural to have this kind of approach. But also remember, in 2012, AWS was only 4 years old. So EC2, which is the elastic compute units that AWS provides as an example, was something that was available, but a lot of the services on top were not available yet. So it was also very early on. This was before Docker was even a thing. This was way before Kubernetes. But also back then, we already had the hypothesis, okay, there will be elasticity in workloads. So if you think about Internet of Things deployments, you have actual users using things. And so you need this kind of elasticity of workloads. This is where cloud computing came into that. But also you always need to integrate edge, what we now call edge. Back then, people had different terms for that. But what we now call edge computing is something we already focused on. So it's almost like a cloud to edge conversions, which we focused on very early on. And it turns out that if you go into the manufacturing space, this is also very helpful, because there is something what is now called OT-IT conversions, operations technology and information technology conversions, where companies are, I would say, almost forced to work together really between the digital world and the physical world. And this is also where our technology is used a lot these days. I think before 2020 or 2018, actually, most of our customers were in the automotive space, were in the connected devices space, so connecting things over the internet. And these days, we also do a lot of manufacturing, logistics, transportation, renewables, oil and gas, and other energy solutions.
You know, what's interesting is when you mention your customers, I keep coming back to this, your dual footing in high reliability data centers and in manufacturing starting up. Because as I look at some of the customers, I see BMW and Daimler on one side, you know, the OT companies, if you will, Netflix and SiriusXM on the other side, enterprise IT. I have to ask, what would you consider to be some of your notable wins with these clients and perhaps beyond?
There is a lot of wins we've seen over the years. And what's always exciting me is what our customers do for their customers. And what I'm always so excited if I look at the customers we currently work with, what they're about to build for their customers. And sometimes we see it 3 years before the customer actually, before their customers see it, because we usually brought in also very early on in the developments of new products, of new projects and so on within our customers. So these days we do a lot of work, especially with Fortune 500 customers, but also big enterprises around the globe. So we focus mainly on in the US and also in Europe. This is, I think, where we have seen the strongest traction so far. And really the industry span from, as I said, like from transportation logistics to automotive, to manufacturing, to also like this digital products and services. And I think while there's different challenges, as an example, if I work with a big automotive company, they have the problem of massive scale because they produce millions of devices each year relentlessly. So you need technology that actually supports that, that growth. This is one thing. But if I look in a manufacturing use case, usually there's a pretty static workload. So it's not like whatever 1,000 machines show up one day in a factory and then you're surprised by additional integrations there. Here you have much more stable workloads, but other things getting more important, like reliability, latencies, predictable latencies and other things. And our technology focuses on catering to all of these extremes. And this also makes it also very versatile. So this is why we work with very different industries. But also our reference customers, as you said, you mentioned some of our reference customers there. But if you look at Fortune 500 companies, there is a lot of them, especially also if you look at the Fortune 100, we work with many of them. What is really interesting is many consider, since we are offering for them also a paradigm shift of how to do things, many of them consider the work we do with them as very strategic and also as a competitive advantage. But yeah, so, but just to give you a few examples, if you get a package delivered somewhere on the globe, chances are HiveMQ is being used. If you buy a European or American car, usually HiveMQ, you will use HiveMQ while you use the device or at least when it was produced. So I think the footprint of what our company does is you see a lot, but you usually will never hear the name HiveMQ or hear it because we're really not customer focused. So we are enabling our customers for that. So this is why it doesn't have a very strong brand when it comes to consumers. But in the B2B world, especially in the communication world, I think we are pretty well known at this point of time.
Yeah, I would certainly say so. I'm curious, how do you know when a potential client is ready to adopt your solution? And what have you seen as some of the best practices in those clients realizing the full value?
Yeah. So when a client is ready, it's very different. And there's different models also what different consulting companies use. But there is a very traditional model where markets are also segmented in innovators, early adopters, and then also you have then the early maturity, late maturity, and laggards. This is a very traditional model. And depending on the industry, we see there's different appetites. So in the automotive industry, as an example, the technologies we provide is definitely not an innovator technology anymore. This is a table stakes. So we see, I would say this is early maturity, what we see here. We could be on the verge even to late maturity there. 10 years ago, clearly we worked with the innovators. BMW is one of them, but also other, especially German car manufacturers. But these days, MQTT as a technology and HiveMQ as an implementation of the technology is for many of these customers just table stakes, which also makes it easier for us to also have conversations with other vendors that are also trying to catch up. So you see a lot of catch up there. When we look at the manufacturing space as an example, here we completely see the flip side. So there is new ways of accessing data being proposed, especially listeners who work in that space. They might be familiar with the term unified namespace as an example, which provides a concept how to make data accessible across the whole organization, OT data and IT data accessible and have a central data hub pretty much. And this is also where HiveMQ is being used a lot. But here we clearly see innovators and also early adopters doing this. So I think we're very far from the big chunk of the market here. And the reason why companies are looking into that is because there is a lot of pressure from the market and also from competition to change. And I mean, it's so interesting. A while ago, I read an article that argued that if you look at the S&P 500 over the history, I think that more than 90% or even 95% of all of these companies that were once listed on the stock market don't exist anymore, go out of business, because they're only, as cheesy as it sounds, the only constant is change. And while I think a company could get away for being resistant to change for a very long time until they get disrupted, disruption happens at a much faster pace because of distribution costs is zero with the internet. Compute cost is pretty much zero these days. Also compared to the past, it's getting better. Energy prices are getting cheaper if you look at any kind of metrics there. So there's so much going to happen. Like all of the ingredients for disruption are happening right now. The basic knowledge is there. And so I think especially big corporations are pressured to change and they're looking for ways to do that. And HivenQ is one of the technology vendors. We usually come in when companies are ready for either new projects to try out, get a small dip in change. And we have some company, Fortune 500 companies, especially in the US, who go all in and with us get business results in a year. They're surprised by the results they get because a big change doesn't always mean it's very hard to do once we're committed and once the organization really wants to do that. So this is what I said, especially big companies, but also a lot of SMBs we work with. We usually don't work a lot with startups these days, but we also have completely free offerings. So for startups, like all our software is free to use.
So speaking of disruptive technologies, certainly high on most people's mind would be, you know, Gen AI, aka Chat GPT, at least as people would see it. Yeah. To what degree have you seen Gen AI impacting industrial systems and particularly HivenQ?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. And a lot of conversations these days I have with our clients is around this topic. So Gen AI per se, I think, might be a bit exaggerated. So in the short term, I think it's overhyped, but in the long term, I think it's underrated. I think this is the situation you're in. So Gen AI is pretty much, like, if you look at the definitions of that, it's just a subset of ML, machine learning, and with some very specific models and for some very specific problems to solve. And it's also a pretty new field. Like one of the foundations for that, the Transformers papers came out in 2017. So it's pretty new, but of course, every company is asking themselves, like, what does it mean for us? The thing is, I don't know. So if I could predict that, this would be really great. I don't know. But there's a few things I do know. Number one, I do know that we are now on this AI journey as humanity, and we haven't even started seeing what it means. I don't even think we have the technologies built right now that actually will be the winning technologies for anything around AI technology in particular. On the other hand, what I do know is if I work with LLMs, which I don't think for manufacturers will be the silver bullet for many of the problems they're looking to solve for it. I do know if I go to LLMs or traditional machine learning approaches or any of the other things that have not even been invented yet, all of them need data. And they need data access pretty much in real time from anywhere around the globe. And this is really what we do as HivenQ. We deliver the data from anywhere around the globe to anywhere around the globe at a scale from, let's say, one packet per second up to millions of packets per second or even more. So I think HivenQ will be the provider for a lot of the data. And these days, data is saved at rest in data lakes and other things. I believe the future will be data in motion that is used to make real-time decisions. Because if you have AI systems that are able to make decisions based on data they observe at this specific moment, we don't need to wait for humans. And what I know is we will be the main provider. The central nervous system we provide for our customers will make them have better business decisions. And I do hope with AI systems. I'm not convinced that generative AI is the solution for all of the problems there, but it will definitely play a big role.
Great insights. And I always like asking the question because we obviously invest in a lot of industrial infrastructure companies. You know, you mentioned UNS or Unified Namespace. Mm-hmm. You know, the Kepler founders founded a company we've invested in, and most recently, we've invested in Aperio as well. So definitely an interesting space. So speaking of future, you guys closed an impressive $43 million Series A round in mid-2022. Very impressive, especially for a European headquarter company. what can we expect to see from HiveMQ over this next year?
There's a lot to see. So we scaled the business now pretty nicely with that. So we as a company, we're a customer-driven business. So we recently released this year some new products, for example, HiveMQ Edge, which allows to extend the central nervous system even further, really down to machines and a lot of proprietary protocols there for customers to build a really decentralized unified namespace. This is one of the things we released, and we do it in an open source way. So we do not believe that integrating proprietary technology should cost money for customers. I think customers should pay money once they get value out of something, and I do not believe plumbing in itself provides value. And so we're going to market there. So we have released some products there. We heavily invested also in our own cloud. So a lot of enterprises these days use HiveMQ Cloud as a managed service for connecting their millions of truck drivers, for millions of their package delivery and people and so on. And this is what we do. And we have a lot in store also for next year. There's some things I cannot mention right now at this point, but everybody who's interested in that, so they can follow us very closely on this one. But also what we released is something called Data Hub, which makes it possible for big scale industrial deployments, but also automotive deployments or any other industry deployments to actually get insights into data, stop bad data, heal bad data, and finally solve the problem of the garbage in, garbage out problem. That is a big prohibitor also for AI technologies, to be very frank. And so we did a lot of work there, but we haven't even started yet. So I think what we released to market, I think the customers haven't even seen yet what will be possible also going forward next year. So I'm very, very excited about this. What I can tell is we believe in open standards. As a company, it's not our job to lock in customers with proprietary technology. Our job is to provide the value for customers. And so a lot of the decisions we make are not guided by lock-in principles, but they are guided by how can we provide more value while customers have the freedom of choice what they do with their data. And so, yeah, I'm very excited for next year. So I hope people stay tuned.
Awesome. So when you're not co-founding a great startup, writing books on IoT and serving in leadership capacity in Oasis standard, where do you find your personal inspiration?
Far away from technology. I do believe technology is really a way to drive things forward, but there are some things that never change. Technology is one of the things that always change. This is our vehicle we've built or we invented as humanity. And we invent technology to drive things forward. But there are some principles that apply a part of the human nature that have been there forever since humans exist. And this is something I am interested a lot in. This means also when it comes to, as an example, philosophy or something. But there's also nature. I do believe people today would be much better off to also spend more time with nature, also unplugged from technology. So I do think we need, as humanity, we need to get better to use the tools correctly, including technology. And so I try to spend a lot of time away from technology when not working. But realistically, I spend way too much time anyways with technology based on work. So yeah, and I read a lot of books. I listen to a lot of podcasts and get some inspiration there. But I also enjoy a lot of deep conversation with leaders in the industry, but also leaders in other spaces.
Excellent. One may argue that your time away from technology makes you a better technologist. And certainly your track record would speak to that. So, well, Dominic, thank you for sharing this time and these great insights with us today.
Yeah, thank you, Ken.
So this has been Dominic Obermeier, CTO and co-founder at HiveMQ, the most trusted MQTT platform. Although I would say you guys should use the tagline, the resiliency company, because that's really what you do. So thank you for listening. And please join us for the next episode of our Digital Thread podcast series. We wish you a momentous day. You've been listening to the Momenta Digital Thread podcast series. We hope you've enjoyed the discussion. And as always, we welcome your comments and suggestions. Please check our website at momenta.one for archived versions of podcasts, as well as resources to help with your digital industry journey. Thank you for listening.